Hi, I'm Jillian, and welcome to another Court Junkie update. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for subscribing, reviewing, donating, and everything else you've been doing to support this podcast. As a friendly reminder, if you like the show, please consider leaving me a review. Now on to the episode. There has been a huge development in the Erica Parsons case, which I covered back in episode 5. To recap, Erica would have been 15 years old when she was reported missing in August 2013. After being kicked out of his home, Erica's adoptive older brother, James, went right to police in Rowan County, North Carolina, and he told them that his adoptive sister, Erica, had been missing for 2 years. He said his parents, Sandy and Casey Parsons, told him that Erica had gone to live with her biological grandmother, but that he didn't believe that was true. This kicked off an intensive missing persons investigation into Erica's whereabouts, but not with any luck. Sandy and Casey continue to stonewall the investigation and tell police, reporters, and anybody who would listen that Erica was with her bio grandmother, a woman named Nan, who police say never existed. In July 2014, Sandy and Casey were arrested and charged with fraud after the FBI discovered that they were still accepting monthly checks from the government for Erica, even though she was no longer at their house. At their sentencing hearing, James Parsons testified that there had been extreme abuse in the household and that Erica had been routinely beaten, kept in a closet, and fed dog food. Sandy and Casey were sent to prison, and Erica was still missing. When I started digging into this case about a month ago, I found Erica's adoptive sister, Brooklyn, who was 2 years older than Erica. I recorded our interview in episode 5, and Brooklyn was brave enough to talk about the abuse she witnessed against Erica, her feelings towards her parents, and then something else I never expected— that she had visited Sandy, her father, in prison, and that he had essentially implicated Casey Parsons in Erica's murder. Brooklyn said she asked him, "Did Mom?" and that Sandy had nodded his head yes. Then this past Friday, police announced that Erica's body had been found, and after a weekend of speculation, they held a press conference on Monday. The Rowan County Sheriff went over the timeline of the police investigation from when Erica was reported missing until today.
As you know, we started this investigation in 2013 when Erica was reported missing by a family member. Several stories surfaced. Detective Clint Malden had the case at that time. Erica was entered missing, and we started following up on the information we had. Shortly after that, DSS returned to the Parsons home and took custody of Sadie and Toby Parsons. And Casey and Sandy at this time made the statement they no longer would speak to investigators without an attorney. The FBI joined at this point in the investigation on August the 8th. On August the 9th, we had a meeting with the SBI, ourselves, and the FBI, and we formulated a strategy in this case. And we did it, knowing we were behind the eight ball. And what we did at that time, the FBI was going to handle any fraud cases in their arena. We would continue to investigate the missing persons and possibly any child abuse. That was the strategy we formulated that day, and we stayed pretty true to that course, as you know. August 11th, 12th, and 13th, 2013, the case kind of got national notoriety when the Parsons, Casey, and Sandy went to California and appeared on the Dr. Phil show. As you know, Sandy failed a polygraph test on that show, and Casey did not take one. August the 14th, we obtained a search warrant for the Parsons house at 218 Miller Chapel Road. The FBI evidence team executed a search warrant, and there were some items collected then. August the 16th, we received a phone call. The neighbor said it appeared the Parsons were going to move. This is still in 2013. We also obtained another search warrant for Sandy and Casey's storage building in China Grove. And then in late August 28th of 2013, Casey and Sandy moved to Fayetteville. October 21st and 22nd, different human remains human range detection canine dogs made at Miller Chapel Road and several other locations in Rowan County. We used the canines in different locations where we'd receive reports to see if the dogs would alert on anything. Nothing was located. A second search warrant at the address was executed at 270 Sutton Road in November 14th, 2013. And then we kind of had a cold period and picked back up with some things we needed to do in the investigation. March the 4th of 2014, we did a statewide check to see if Erica Lynn Parsons had by chance done anything through DMV, received a ticket, obtained a driver's license, or anything. In early July of 2014, Detective Malden resigned from the sheriff's office to go into work in another field, and the case was assigned to Detective Sarah Benfield. July 30th of 2014, Casey and Sandy were arrested in Fayetteville by the FBI on federal fraud charges. And in March of 2015, they were both sentenced to active sentences in federal prison for the fraud charges. So now we talked about that strategy, I did briefly, but then June 3rd of 2015, Sarah Benfield also left the sheriff's office to go take another job. So Lieutenant Detective Moose took over the case. The focus of the investigation at this time shifted to a probable death investigation with two investigative strategies again. One, if we ever located Erica's body, and preparing for a possible prosecution should we never find Erica or her remains. In November of 2015, November 2nd, the new owners of the home on Miller Chapel Road, where the Parsons previously lived, said they had found some bones on the property, and it was determined to be animal bones, not human remains. So from February of 2016 until May of 16, Lieutenant Moose looked through the case file and started re-interviewing and recontacting any potential witnesses, anybody in the family that we could talk with. That June 29th of 2016, locations where possible human remains connected to this case and searched at locations around China Grove. You know, you probably heard from time to time rumors of whales being searched and different graves being dug up, and that's what was going on during those times, but nothing was fruitful in those searches. So through July and August of this year, this is where the case really picks up. We established a communication line with Sandy Parsons at Butner. Dialogue between Sandy Parsons and investigators continued over the next several weeks. This dialogue resulted in several trips to the area of Pageland, South Carolina by Rowan County investigators and FBI agents. Searches are conducted, but nothing was located. So September of this year, just recently, the case really jumped forward. Hard work by our district attorney, Brandy Cook, who was actually in trial preparations on a murder trial that will start next week, went through this case thoroughly and helped us determine and find a way to temporarily take Sandy Parsons into custody from the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So we were able to take him to Chesterfield County, Pageland, South Carolina, aided by the FBI, the SBI, Chesterfield County Sheriff's Office, and SLED. As previously released by the sheriff in Chesterfield County, the remains of Erica Parsons were located in a shallow grave just outside of Pageland. And it was not on any property rented or owned by any of the Parsons family members. This location was processed by the agents on the scene. The skeletonized human remains were then transported to the North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office for identification examination. On Friday morning, September the 30th, they confirmed absolutely those were the remains of Erica Parsons. So that's a snapshot real quick. A couple little things I want to put out to you today that are very important, I think. We believe through this investigation that Erica was deceased long before she was even reported missing. Unfortunately, we never had a chance to find her alive, which was always our goal and our hope. Second, I want to clear up one thing. There have been no pleas, no agreements, no promises, anything to anybody that may or may become a suspect in this case. Nobody has been promised one thing. We're not in a position to do that, and it hadn't been done. And the burning question I know is, when is somebody going to be arrested? Well, that's where we are in hopes that the medical examiner will soon give us information that'll lead us to the decision on what charges are appropriate, the most appropriate. And, you know, at this time, we feel like all those charges will be a state matter here in Rowan County. And then the last thing I want to do in closing, there's been a lot of information put out about Erica's funeral and money. Well, what I want to tell you is Lyerly's Funeral Home out of Salisbury has agreed to donate their services to conduct the funeral. West Lawn Memorial Garden out of China Grove has donated a grave plot for Erica. What we'll ask the public to do, and anybody that's interested, to consider donating for her marker and what we hope to be an angel, because that was something she had a passion for, angels. And those donations can be made to Prevent Child Abuse Rowan, 130 Woodson Street, Salisbury, North Carolina, 28144. And please, on those donations, make a notation of Erica's angel. And please understand, this has been a very tough, difficult case for us. Everybody involved in this case has children. And it touches you. I was there at the graveside when her body was recovered, and I'll tell you, there's some pretty tough officers had a pretty tough time. It's worn on all of us, and we're getting there. We're not where we want to be with this case. We're glad to have found Erica. We're going to get her to a good resting spot, and then we're going to continue to seek justice with these partners that I've mentioned and these folks that are up here with me. We're going to see this case through and get it finished. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for all your coverage of this story, and it is an important story. Thank you.
I want to echo what the sheriff said, that it is an important story. Erica has touched people all over the world, which is obvious if you do a search for her name on Twitter, Facebook, or anywhere else online. Thousands of people who didn't even know this little girl, myself included, have found a spot in their hearts for her. Her story is unbelievably tragic, but it's important to hear because it puts a spotlight on the abuse that she and many children around the world face. And because it reminds us that as adults, we have a responsibility to take care of these children. And if you see abuse, speak up about it. I spoke to Erica's biological mom after episode 5 was released. She told me that in early 2011, months before Erica was last seen, she met her for the first time. And she and Casey had talked about her getting Erica back, but they decided that they would ease into it so as not to overwhelm Erica. But as we all know, Erica never made it to go live with her bio mom. I'm betting charges will be brought against Sandy and Casey Parsons soon. And when that happens, I'll post another update. And that's all for this episode. If you need to talk to somebody about child abuse, you can always call the National Child Abuse Hotline at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. If you like this podcast, please consider leaving a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever it is that you're listening from. You can follow me on Twitter at CourtJunkiePod, on Facebook at CourtJunkie, or you can email me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. I'm also happy to announce that I started a Facebook group where we can discuss these cases, as well as anything else true crime or court related. Just search for the Court Junkie Discussion Group on Facebook. Thanks for listening.